Hey everybody, you are listening to 93.9 WLXU Lexington Community Radio, and this is the Green Waves Radio Program, a program of Bluegrass Green Source. I'm in the studio today with our guest Dan Stever, the Director of Employee Development and Outreach with the Clausing Group, a great landscaping operation here in Lexington. And Dan is actually our first repeat guest, so we're very happy to have him back in the studio today. We're going to be talking about things that you should be thinking about for sustainable landscaping and planting here in the fall. October is a great month to do some plantings in your yard or at your facility. But before we get into our conversation with Dan, I want to share a couple of news stories with you that are environmental news stories for this week. Our first story this week comes from the Lexington Herald Leader. A coal company that once had extensive operations in eastern Kentucky announced Thursday this week that it had sold one of its two remaining properties. Alpha Natural Resources said it had sold the assets of its Enterprise Mining Corporation affiliate to Kingdom Coal, which is a subsidiary of Keystone Kingdom Resources in Fort Worth, Texas. Enterprise had an underground mine called the EMC No. 9 in Knott County and a preparation plant at Roxana in Letcher County. The company idled the mine in July, but federal records show that the prep plant is active. There were 85 employees let go when the mine shut down last summer, Alpha spokesman Steve Hawkins said. Kingdom Coal has expressed interest in restarting the Enterprise mine, Alpha Chief Executive David Stetson said in a news release. The sale commenced the implementation of our strategy to divest non-strategic properties, Stetson said in a news release. That was part of the company's plan coming out of bankruptcy protection earlier this year. The company did not release how much Kingdom Coal paid for Enterprise. Alpha Natural Resources had 11 mines in eastern Kentucky in 2012, but Enterprise and Sydney Coal were the last two that were active. The company announced last month that it would shut down Sydney Coal's process energy mine in November and lay off about 115 people. That was the company's last active mine in eastern Kentucky. The coal industry has slumped badly in the region because of several factors, including competition from natural gas, tougher rules to protect air and water quality, and the depletion of many major seams, as well as the rise of renewable energy. This next story comes to us from the Associated Press. Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell says the country must not turn its back on the nation's coal miners. But that's exactly what those miners say the Republican Senate Majority Leader is doing. For 2 years, McConnell has repeatedly blocked efforts to rescue a pension plan and health benefits for 13,000 retired union miners in Kentucky. Many face a slow death from black lung disease and other chronic ailments. "We're dying like flies," said Billy Smith, a coal miner for 39 years, who said McConnell's lack of support was difficult to understand, given all the ailments he sees among his fellow retirees in his local union. Last week, McConnell told a group of business leaders in Pike County, eastern Kentucky's second largest coal producer, that, quote, "the country must not turn its back on Kentucky coal miners," end quote. But he says the pension issue is more complicated than just helping miners, since the proposed rescue would benefit only union miners while doing nothing for non-union workers who have also lost their jobs. McConnell's office disputes that he has blocked the measure, with the spokesman saying McConnell believes it should come before the Senate through regular order and not attached to another bill. The bill cleared the Senate Finance Committee last month, but McConnell has yet to call it for a vote. Workers like Joseph Holland, a retired union coal miner in Owensboro, said the federal government owes them their pensions and health benefits because of a promise former President Harry Truman made in the 1940s that ended a costly strike. Holland said he believes McConnell is punishing the United Mine Workers of America for endorsing his opponent during the 2014 U.S. Senate race, which McConnell won easily. He says he supports coal, but you know no evidence that he supported the coal miner, Holland said. It's very frustrating. McConnell said the union's 2014 endorsement was irrelevant to his actions on the bill. The bill briefly came back to life last month when the Senate Finance Committee approved it, clearing the way for a Senate floor vote. But McConnell did not call it up prior to the October recess, meaning that it won't be considered again until after the election, when McConnell says he hopes, quote, "we can find a way forward." Meanwhile, the Patriot Voluntary Employee Beneficial Association notified about 12,500 retired union coal miners last week that their health benefits would cease on December 31st without congressional action. McConnell and Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump are enjoying immense popularity in coal communities after blaming the region's economic troubles on President Barack Obama's efforts to promote clean energy alternatives. But Trump has remained silent on this bill, leaving the GOP leadership lukewarm at best on a measure many retired miners say is crucial to their well-being. The bill is backed by Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton, who has been pilloried for her comment about putting coal miners and coal companies out of business, even though she said it while stressing that the nation cannot abandon coal workers as the economy shifts away from fossil fuels. Quote, "We're going to make it clear that we don't want to forget these people," she said. "Those people labored in those mines for generations, losing their health, often losing their lives, to turn on our lights and power our factories," end quote. Senator McConnell, who won Pike County by 28 percentage points in 2014 after decades of Democratic dominance, described Democratic efforts to fight global warming as ideological and immoral. Quote, "You talk about morality," McConnell said. "I'll tell you what's immoral, to pursue ideological policies that will have little meaningful impact on the environment, but have a very real and very negative impact on our economy, on jobs, and on our way of life. It's immoral to put more and more people out of work who only seek to make a decent living, to provide for their families, and provide a reliable source of energy for us all, as their fathers and their fathers' fathers did before them," end quote. Representatives for candidate Trump, who has promised to bring coal jobs back despite dire economic forecasts, did not respond to requests for comment. Both West Virginia senators have co-sponsored the pension and health plan. Republican Shelley Moore Capito says a Trump endorsement of the proposal wouldn't have much effect at this point, but Democrat Joe Manchin says an endorsement from the billionaire would mean a lot. Quote, "I know that Donald Trump, being the nominee from the Republican Party, he could be very influential in asking other Republican senators to please verbally sign on and support the Miners Protection Act," end quote. Senator Manchin has endorsed Secretary Clinton. He said that would be very, very helpful. And then finally, our last story is a local one that came out yesterday from the Lexington Herald Leader. Lexington ranked among the least green cities in a new study that criticized its lack of green space compared to the other 99 largest cities in the country. Wallet Hub, a personal finance site that gets a lot of attention for its data-driven rankings, put Lexington at 92nd and Louisville at 95th in its study of the 100. In the study of the greenest among the 100 most populous cities in America. Cities were ranked on 20 key green indicators, including greenhouse gas emissions, smart energy policies, miles of bike lanes, air quality, percentage of parkland, water quality, and more. The data was culled from the U.S. Census Bureau, Environmental Protection Agency, Trust for Public Land, County Health Rankings, American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, and more. Lexington ranked 23rd for its greenhouse gas emissions, 95th for green space, 53rd for commuters who drive, 57th for biking, 61st for number of farmers markets per capita, and 78th for walking. And those are a couple of news stories for you guys to know about this week. I'm glad now to be joined in the studio by our guest, Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach for the Clausen Group in Lexington. Welcome back to the studio, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me back.
It's great to have you back in here again. I thought maybe we could, with that last story about the new ranking in Lexington, seems pretty dire. It seems pretty negative. There's definitely a lot more that we can do, but there's also some bright spots in the future. What can you share with us about your all's understanding of that study and what you guys are looking to for hope in the future?
Well, for those of us that are involved in environmental efforts in the Kentucky area, we're not really surprised by that ranking, but it's important to notice or recognize that there has been a lot of progress made. You know, the conversation about the Town Branch park system, exposing that creek through downtown, making a linear park, that's a real good thing.
Yeah. that would be an amazing transformation for our downtown.
It would. And over in the Louisville area, there's the Floyd's Fork Park that has recently opened, and they've had, I think, 2 million visitors in the first year, and it's just expected to go up from there.
Right. And there's also been a lot of conversation recently about expanding our Legacy Trail bike lanes to go out that could really connect people to shopping centers and things like that that we currently don't have access to.
Right. And so, you know, look at not just where our ranking is now, but we've all been in this community for a while. We know where we've been and how much it's improved in a short period of time and all the energy that's moving forward. One indicator of that is just a couple decades ago, our urban tree canopy coverage was around 20%, 19% or so.
Wow.
But we have now grown it to nearly 25% in a relatively short period of time without any actual directed effort, organized directed effort. There's a lot of groups out there that work on this, and they're gaining more and more support all the time. And even within the city itself and the urban government, you know, we have a tree board, there's a tree canopy board. So there's a lot of work happening behind the scenes to help propel us forward.
And you serve on that tree canopy board, is that correct?
Well, I'm not a board member, but I attend the meetings, and there's actually a nonprofit that's coming out of the tree canopy committee.
Oh, excellent.
That is going to try to focus on growing our tree canopy to the target, which is 40-45% coverage. And we do have that close to that in a few areas, mostly residential,
right.
But the average across the entire area is only 25%. So there's a lot of work to be done, but there's a lot of people that are organized moving forward and a lot of energy and hopefully some money to help with,
right.
to help with the funds necessary for us to reach that goal, because it's not just about planting. It's also about preserving.
Mm-hmm. And what's the timeline for that? We're hitting that 40-45% target. Have they said that, or is it?
We're working that out. You know, if we can get there within, realistically, you're talking 65,000 trees, 100,000 trees, you know, just the money for that alone is difficult to come by. But, within 10, 20 years, we'll make a significant impact on our urban tree canopy coverage.
It's kind of amazing to even think about the percentage of tree coverage going up in the last 10 or 20 years, given how much further our urban growth boundary has expanded in that time and how much of the previous agricultural lands have been subsumed by development and all that kind of thing. So it's kind of actually even more impressive to think about that, those percentages, numbers going up.
Seems counterintuitive, but one of the things, you know, our agricultural areas is largely horse farms,
right?
And which don't have a lot of trees.
Right.
And same thing with the cornfield, right? You don't have a lot of trees in your cornfield.
Right.
So as this land has been lost, which is its own conversation, but when they build it for development, we actually have zoning regulations that require so many trees to be planted in a development. And that has been one of the biggest influencers in the increase in the canopy.
So for those folks who maybe missed the first time that you and Roscoe were on our show, maybe we could just touch base really quick about who is the Clausing Group? What do you guys do? How long have you been around? That kind of thing.
Well, Clausing Group, we're a company that focuses on commercial landscape maintenance. We do construction as well. We're in both the Lexington and Louisville markets. And we've been in business for 24 years. The focus, really, or the purpose of our company is to create and manage landscapes that do more.
Hmm.
And that's sort of our take on the sustainability movement,
right,
where we want... curb appeal just isn't enough anymore.
Right.
Everybody wants their landscape to look nice, but just because it looks nice doesn't mean that it can't do something for us.
Right.
And, you know, rain gardens, green roofs, those sort of things are examples of landscapes that can do more. Same thing with your plant choices. You can choose some native plants that provide habitat and food for local wildlife, or you can plant something that's not indigenous. It doesn't mean that because it's not native that it's invasive. There's plenty of non-native plants that are not invasive, but they don't provide the same number of services to insects, birds, other little critters.
Right, right. You guys are really sort of, I think, in my mind anyway, one of the leaders in sustainable landscaping in central Kentucky, I think, especially for commercial properties. I don't know if you all would say that or not, but I'll say it.
So. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. We try.
Great. If you are just now tuning in, we're at 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio, and this is the Green Waves radio program. Our guest today in the studio is Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach with the Clausing Group here in Lexington and Louisville. We are going to take a short break. When we come back, we are going to talk more with Dan about what's going on in the fall. Like, what should you be thinking about? Keep it tuned right here, and we'll be back in just a little bit.
Tune in to Urban Conversations
every Monday and Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. on 93.9 WLXU.
Come sit in the lounge with us. I'm your host, Jamin.
And I'm your host, Future, where your voice matters.
Any questions?
WLXU-LVFM, Lexington, Community Radio.
WLXL is supported by the Lexington-Fayette County Health Department. The Health Department is a recognized leader in health promotion, health protection, personal health care, and the prevention of disease. They're located at 650 Newtown Pike and can be reached by phone at 859-252-2371. For more information, visit their website, lexingtonhealthdepartment.org. WLXL recognizes the Health Department as one of our founding community partners.
Back, folks. You've got to tune to 93.9 WLXU, Lexington Community Radio, and this is the Green Waves radio program, a program of Bluegrass Green Source. We're going to jump back into our conversation now with Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach with the Clausing Group here in Lexington and Louisville. Dan, one thing that I think, and I would definitely recommend for listeners who are interested in learning more about sustainability and planting, whether you're residential or commercial property owners, and really for commercial property owners in particular, is that you guys have really excellent newsletters that you put out. Seems like maybe once or twice a week. Is that right?
That's right. And this is something that we've done it for years, but we've really stepped up our effort this past year, and we've turned it into a formal blog post where you can actually go to our website, clausinggroup.com.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And you can sign up for our newsletters there. And we do put one out one or two a week, and they focus on different things, different aspects of the green industry. We talk about what are the best street trees, which is always, you know, what makes it the best, you know.
Right.
Each site's a little bit unique, but we try to run the gamut on that, for shade trees, trees for parking lots, small flowering trees, trees for attracting birds.
Right. I think one thing I really love about the blog post that you guys do is that you write it for people. So there's all this lingo around sustainability, around green infrastructure, these types of words that I think some people hear and they shut it down, they shut it out. But you all, I think, do a really good job of explaining things at a very, for laymen who don't necessarily aren't familiar with what those terms are, you do a good job of explaining what everything means. So people, I think, feel, I certainly always feel like I'm in good hands and that like I'm not being insulted, that you guys really want to help people learn. One thing that I saw this week that was a topic that you all wrote about was, and this is something I've been interested in for a while, they're green roofs. And this is like kind of a relatively new thing in Central Kentucky. Could you tell folks what is a green roof?
Well, a green roof can take a lot of different forms. Generally speaking, you take a little bit of soil, and it's a special type of soil mix that's made for increased water holding and also being lightweight, because you don't want a whole lot of weight on your roof.
Right.
And so you can have between 2 inches and 14 inches of soil up there, or growing media, however you want to call it. And, you know, the most basic kind, you just have a sedum mat, and sedums are just low-growing succulents, and they're very tough, and so it's a nice little green roof up there. But you can also do a pretty intensive planting where you have more soil, and then you have shrubs, maybe even trees up there, and grasses, perennials, and there's some places like in the city of Chicago, their courthouse has a green roof up there that's actually a park, and people go up there, and there's places for picnics and all sorts of stuff. Yeah,
that's awesome. So you mentioned that they sort of hold water, and for that's a benefit to our stormwater system, so it's not as much water going. Because roofs and hard surfaces are like one of the most impermeable surfaces, or surfaces where the water doesn't have anywhere to go, or add a real stress to our water infrastructure. What other benefits do green roofs provide?
Well, you know, what you mentioned there with the water is really big, because cities are very impervious. They don't, you know, they get water away. They don't hold water. So part of, you know, sustainability and green infrastructure is looking to kind of turn the landscape into a sponge. But green roofs in particular, what they can do is they can reduce your costs on heating and cooling for the season. They improve air quality, because they'll actually help catch all the particulates that come off from our tires and our brakes, things like that, where normally you don't have any kind of vegetation. We reduce our heat island effect. So, living out in the country, when I drive out from Lexington, it's a 5 to 10 degree drop as soon as I cross 75. So
it's incredibly noticeable. We took a trip out from our offices downtown to Greenhouse 17 this summer, and just like it was amazing how much difference it was.
Absolutely. And then there's also the CO2 sequestration, biodiversity and habitat creation, and then something that most people don't actually think about, but there's also noise reduction. So if you have those hard surfaces, they're just bounce the noise, where the softness of the plant material can help dampen.
I never even thought about that. So you mentioned there's a weight issue that you have to sort of try to balance. Are there other structural challenges that green roofs present, or that people should be thinking about if they're interested in green roofs or considering a green roof?
Well, you want to make sure that you consult and hire somebody that knows what they're doing, because if it's like anything, if the base is bad, the whole thing fails. And with the green roof, that is water. So you need to make sure that you have a good liner, that so that you don't have any kind of water damage, because you could build the whole thing, and if there's a hole somewhere, you have to take it all apart and fix it. But the having said that, when they're done right, they have great longevity, and some estimates out there say that there's a 10% ROI on it. So
What's that mean?
Return on investment. Thank you.
Yeah, no problems. Who is a good candidate for a green roof, and maybe who is not a great candidate for a green roof?
Well, definitely new construction is probably the best candidate.
It's just easier to start at that base level beginning.
Because the problem you have with existing structures is whether or not they can be retrofitted to support the weight. Sometimes the cost of retrofitting your structure to be able to support the weight of even just a sedum mat becomes it just renders the project not feasible, simply because of the cost of retrofitting. But there are alternatives. You don't have to do the whole roof. You can do a portion, or you can do like we did. We found that our structure couldn't be retrofitted in a cost-effective way, so we ended up building a new structure just outside a pergola that covers the entrance to our building.
Right.
And so we get some, you know, not as much as we were hoping to get initially, but we do have some.
And that's a really good point. One thing I'm curious about is, I think when you say things like green roofs, or you say things like solar panels or some of these measures that people hear about and they know about, it's helpful to be able to see them, see them in action. And so, and see examples, because I think it just helps people understand, oh, it's a real thing. It's like people are actually doing this. So your all's offices, you all do have a green roof. You all did install a green roof a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And that's the big problem with green roofs, is that most of the time you can't see them.
Right.
So ours is set up as a display, and you can actually see it from the ground. So we're near McConnell Springs, 1356 Cahill Drive. If you want to take a ride by, you can see our green roof up there. We have things that flower about 9-10 months out of the year up there. And so it's pretty nice.
And you guys also have, sort of getting off green roofs for just a second, the facility that you all have, you all have made a number of sustainability upgrades to the landscaping, to the outside. Can you tell folks about some of what those are?
Sure.
So if they want to see what those things are, want to see examples.
Sure. So, really everything was, we started by the consent decree that the EPA had against LFUCG.
Right.
And we were able to win a grant early on that allowed us to do a lot of this work, thankfully.
Nice.
And so we have a number of green infrastructure projects, and green infrastructure doesn't always have to be plants.
Hmm.
So we have a system that's a rain harvesting system, very similar to a rain barrel at somebody's house,
right,
just bigger.
Right.
And that collects water off about a quarter of our roof.
Wow.
And then we have two permeable paving parking lots, and basically it's just little bricks that are instead of asphalt or concrete, and that allows the water to percolate through or run through. And then we have detention areas under that parking lot. Uh-huh. So we have about 3 feet of space under there that can hold water, pretty close to about 30,000 gallons of water.
Wow.
And that captures it and allows it to percolate slowly into the groundwater system. Then we got our, we also have a rain garden, and it's also a registered Monarch Way station for us.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And at the end of this whole thing, there is, it's all one big chain. And at the end of the chain, we have our water quality unit. And so all the water that we don't capture ends up going into there, and it helps separate out all the really fine particulates and oils and things. And they drop down into a collection basket. When that fills up, we take it out and empty it. But what that does is, our 2 acres of land, the first inch of rain that falls, it's called the first flush, is the terminology that people use. That first inch of rain that falls in our 2 acres equates to about 60,000 gallons of water.
Wow.
And our green infrastructure system... Just on our 2 acres.
Wow.
60,000 gallons.
So 30,000 an acre is...
Yes.
Rough. Wow.
And...
it's crazy.
Our green infrastructure can capture about 50,000 gallons of that.
Wow.
So that leaves only 10,000 gallons that's entering into our stormwater system.
Right.
And so we have as little water as possible, and it's as clean as possible entering our system. And we all know that, you know, we all hear the stories of America's infrastructure and the trouble that it's in. So being able to prevent the contribution into the system just helps reduce that much in maintenance.
And so that brings up a good point. We talked about some of the benefits. In terms of financial benefits, are things like green roofs expensive to install? And are there, you all mentioned that you had received several years ago a grant from the city as part of the EPA decree to incentivize the installation of these measures. Are there tax breaks? Are there other financial incentives to help businesses and or residential folks make these types of upgrades?
Absolutely. That's a great question. So the cost of the green roof really varies upon, you know, are you putting on a new structure or an old structure? So that cost right there is difficult to determine. It's unique to your situation. But in general, once you start building it, it's $10 to $25 per square foot, according to an EPA study. So you know, it's a little bit expensive, but when you start looking at the credits that are available, you can find things through federal, state, and city initiatives. Wow. And I'm just going to list off a few here for you. Awesome. There's the Energy Policy Act of 2015 that provides tax credits up to $1.80 per square foot. The city of Chicago, they offer covering up to 50% of the cost of installation. Wow. Up to $100,000.
Wow.
Ohio offers below market loans. New York City has a tax credit up to $4.50 per square foot.
Wow.
And there's a Clean Energy Stimulus and Investment Insurance Act that allows a variety of tax credits, other incentives, up to a 30% tax credit to residential and commercial property owners if they install a new one or retrofit to a green roof on at least 50% coverage. And I did a search, and I wasn't able to find much for green roofs in Kentucky,
right.
But I did find a lot for solar.
Right, right. And we have a new, so there's a new statewide program, and I'm going to get the name wrong. In other states, it's called PACE, which is Property Assessment for Clean Energy. So it's energy focused. And here we call it something else. But essentially, you can, businesses can make upgrades on their structures and their offices and that kind of thing, and then pay for it through the taxes on their yearly tax bill for their property. So there are incentives, and it's not always easy to find them, but heck, if it's only $10 a square foot and you can get it down to $5 a square foot, that seems like a pretty smart investment. If you're just now tuning in, we're talking to Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach at the Clausing Group here in Lexington. We are talking about sustainability and landscaping, and when we come back, we're going to have some events for you to know about happening in and around Lexington in the coming week and this weekend, and then we're going to talk more about what kind of planting should you be doing in October. A lot of folks don't think about the fall as being a good time to plant and get out in the garden, but it's actually a perfect time. So stick around, and we're going to have more for you in just a minute or two.
Did you just look down at your phone? You did it again, didn't you? You know, you're flying down the road in a 3-ton hunk of steel, and a text takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. At 55 miles per hour, that's long enough to travel the length of a football field and cause some serious damage. Turn it off. Trust me. Whatever it is, you'll live.
Learn more at StopTextStopWrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Smithtown Seafood, one of Lexington's newest farm-to-table restaurants, is located at the corner of Jefferson and West 6th Street. Smithtown Seafood's menu is both familiar and creative, emphasizing local foods and old-fashioned Kentucky recipes in dishes such as beer cheese with West 6th Porter, wild-caught fried catfish, flavor-packed burgers, vegetarian and vegan specialties, salads, and ethnic seafood dishes such as fish tacos and tilapia Singapore, and much more. Smithtown makes everything on the menu from scratch and whenever possible with local Kentucky-raised ingredients. Smithtown Seafood is in the Weta Michaels family of restaurants, which includes Holly Hill Inn and the Midway School Bakery in Midway, Wallace Station in Versailles, and Windy Corner here in Lexington. For more information, you can call Smithtown Seafood at 859-303-4100, or you can check them out online at smithtownseafood.com. Lexington Community Radio thanks Smithtown Seafood for supporting Community Radio.
Welcome back. You've got attuned to 93.9 WLXU Lexington Community Radio, and this is the Green Waves Radio Program, a program of Bluegrass Green Source. Before we get back into our conversation with Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach at the Clausing Group here in Lexington and Louisville, I'm going to have a few events for you guys to know about that are going on in and around Lexington this weekend, and one great event that's happening next week. This Saturday from 4 to 10 p.m., there will be a Fall Family Festival at 1388 Alexandria Drive in Lexington. This is a benefit and celebration of Lexington's Latino community and will be hosted by 93.9 WLXU and our sister station WLXL 95.7. Area Latino businesses are providing free pizza and drinks for the whole family, and there will be live music by Irene Alcaraz, DJ Rios, and Grupo Beta. In addition to great music and free food, there will also be info tables for those folks who want to connect and learn more about what is going on in our community. Again, the Fall Family Festival will be tomorrow from 4 to 10 at 1388 Alexandria Drive. And if you see Chuck out there, Chuck Clinney, our station director, it's his birthday, so be sure to wish him a very, very happy birthday. After you leave the Fall Family Festival, you should head on down to West 6th Brewing from 9 to 12 for Drag Bingo for a Cause. Organized and put on by past guests on the show, Home Place High Adventure, this will be a night of bingo and brews that will benefit the Stay Project, which is a great organization doing amazing work for young people in Appalachia. The Imperial Court of Kentucky will be masters of ceremonies while we celebrate trailblazers, rabble-rousers, and champions for the people. Come as a trailblazing icon, do a little gambling, drink some local beer, have a glamorous time, and show your support and solidarity for Stay and all that they do. Bingo rules are $5 a card and 3 rounds. There's an unlimited amount of cards can be played for each round. Prizes will be available from local businesses, breweries, distilleries, wineries, and there will be one-of-a-kind art from local artists that will be awarded with each round of bingo. There will also be door prizes, and a Best Dressed King and Queen Award will cap off the night's festivities. The beneficiaries of this event are, again, the Stay Project, which is a diverse regional network of young people working together to create, advocate for, and participate in safe, sustainable, engaging, and inclusive communities throughout Appalachia and beyond. The Stay Project focuses regionally on Central Appalachia and on youth-led initiatives to build skills, develop networks, and empower youth in Appalachia, especially youth of color and LGBTQ youth, through a diverse array of workshops and annual gatherings. To learn more, you can visit their website, www.thestayproject.com. And again, the host for that evening tomorrow night for Drag Bingo will be Home Place High Adventures, and that will be at West 6th. Before you head down to the Fall Family Festival, you should consider stopping by Bourbon and Toulouse for the 2016 Lexington Empty Bowls event. This annual event is a chance to get an affordable handmade bowl, which is provided by Mudworks here in Lexington, that will have awesome food inside of it, all in support of A Movable Feast, which is a Lexington organization that delivers hot, nutritious meals daily to folks living with HIV in and around our community. The event will set up and be open at 11 a.m. and will run until they sell out, which is usually around 3 p.m. So be sure to hurry up and get there early if you want a bowl. For a $15 donation, you get a handmade bowl and a delicious Cajun meal. So definitely you want to check that out. And lastly, next week in Louisville, the West Jefferson County Community Task Force, an organization that's advocated for environmental justice while working with citizens, industry, and government, will mark its 20th anniversary with a two-day program at the Muhammad Ali Center at 144 North 6th Street. Top regional U.S. Environmental Protection Agency officials, environmental attorney Tom Fitzgerald, executive director of Louisville's Center for Neighbors, Tom Stevens, and local media representatives will open the conference on October 18th with events that are free and open to the public. Participation includes free access to the Ali Museum, according to a news release. Access to exhibits starts at 10 a.m. with registration for a series of evening workshops at 4:15 and sessions starting at 5 and ending at 8:30. On October 19th, from 8 to 3 p.m., there will be sessions on environmental justice for business, industry, city administrators, academia, small businesses, and community members, with additional discussions with local EPA and other local officials. Registration for the second day is $50. From 5:30 to 8 p.m., the task force will host an event to celebrate its 20 years, featuring the presentation of awards. Tickets for that part of the event are $100 apiece, or $1,000 for a table of 10. This task force launched 2 decades ago amid rising concern about industrial pollution in western Louisville. The task force oversaw an air study that led to the city's strategic toxic air reduction program in 2005 and has tracked and facilitated discussions on a variety of other environmental concerns over the years, including Superfund toxic waste sites, water quality, and health screening. It holds a monthly forum that draws members from the public, industry, University of Louisville, Louisville representatives and local and state officials. So that sounds like a really great event that's going to be happening in Louisville next week. If you are up there, you just want to branch out. And so now we're going to get back into our conversation with Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach for the Clausing Group in Lexington. So Dan, before the break, we were saying that people don't necessarily think of October as being a good month for getting out in the garden and getting your hands dirty, but it's actually a great month. Why is that?
Well, as the temperatures cool off, there's less stress on the plants. So summer is a very hard time on plants. Mm. And so once you start getting the cooler temperatures and the rain starts coming back, it's just a better time. The ground is soft. The trees are getting ready to go dormant. And it's just not the trees. It's the shrubs, and there's bulbs as well.
Right.
There's a lot going on heading into the fall and into the winter months.
And is it wetter? I mean, is the rain, I know summer is hot and sometimes we have weeks without rain, so.
Right. The last 2 months have been incredibly dry.
Right.
So we're still looking at, got a couple drizzles the other day, but hopefully we'll get some more rain here shortly. But you talk about, spring is when most people think about getting busy in the garden. That's when mm-hmm. Arbor Day is.
Mm-hmm.
But the Arbor Day Foundation actually calls October the neighborhoods
right.
month
right.
And there's all sorts of great things that come from planting trees. You get increased property value, reduced heat urban island effect, helps with the rainwater, all sorts of things. But when you start looking at the health effects and the social effects mm-hmm. of having trees and green mm-hmm. space,
mm-hmm.
Studies have shown people in hospitals actually heal faster when they mm-hmm. can see a tree out their window.
Wow.
Employees are more productive, crime rates are lower, you have higher occupancy rates if you're renting out a business or whatever.
Mm.
And actually, businesses can charge more money
mm.
for their goods in a place that's well-forested versus a place that has no trees.
And talking about trees, we had briefly talked at the top of the show about some of the canopy issues that we have in Lexington, and we are sort of facing some environmental challenges because of our depleted canopy. What resources are there for people who are looking to plant trees? So whether are there monetary resources, who are good? It might be a trade secret about who you all source your plant materials from, so I won't ask you that. But what resources are there for folks in Central Kentucky who are looking for more information about planting trees here this month?
Sorry. Well, there's the old adage, always ask an old gardener, find someone that's been doing it for a while and ask them some questions, and they'll be able to give you a good hand on that. As far as planting trees, you never want to dig a hole any deeper than what the root ball is, but you want to dig it twice as wide. So
why is that?
What that does is it allows more room for the roots to get out. And so if it's with our clay soils here, if a lot of times if you just dig a hole, you'll see how it gets real slick on the outside of the mm-hmm. hole. Well, that's just like a clay pot to the tree,
right?
Or any plant that you put into the ground. Mm-hmm. And so by digging the hole twice as wide, when you backfill in, and you can add compost or whatever mm-hmm. else you want at that time as well, it gives a looser media for the roots to start going out into, mm-hmm. and so it gives the tree a better chance to become established.
That's great. If I am a homeowner or a commercial property owner, help me understand, what are some of the best options for tree planting in Central Kentucky? If I'm looking for something that's small and ornamental, so it's flowering or fruiting, or if I'm looking for something taller that provides shade?
Right. Well, I would always suggest starting to look at the approved street tree list mm-hmm. that gives you a really good guide of some commonly available trees. But I would also like to go back to the previous point a little bit. There is the Division of Environmental Services here in Lexington that mm-hmm. can provide grants to some neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of HOAs apply to those and they get some assistance. The Tree Canopy Board is putting together Trees Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
And when that becomes functional, it's still being formed.
Right.
It's not ready yet. But their whole purpose is to help get the canopy up to that 40% mark.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's going to be grants and funds available for that. But there's lots of you know, reforest the bluegrass, a lot of groups out there doing a lot of work. And another one that's come up is the Urban Forest Initiative out of UK. And you can Google them, look for them. They have a lot of events going on. They're very active, and they can provide a lot of good direction for people looking to find plants, find you know, maybe some help financially.
And the approved tree street, that's on LFUCG's Environmental Services website. Is that how people find that?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. And then going back to your question, you know, we have several blog posts that talk about trees that are good for this area and the bluegrass for different types of situations.
And that's at clausinggroup.com, right?
Yes, sir. Okay, thank you. But, you know, looking at small ornamental trees, a lot of people like to plant dogwoods.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, our native dogwood doesn't do too well in the bluegrass region. We're too humid. It gets leaf diseases. They're still pretty when they bloom, and I still plant them. But we find that the Coosa dogwood actually performs a little bit better. It has fewer disease problems, and it's not invasive or anything like that. It blooms a little bit later. So really, you can plant both and get more dogwood blooms.
Sort of throughout the whole season.
Yeah. But looking at it, you know, there's other dogwoods too, like the silky dogwood or the gray dogwood, are less common, hard to find, but still great small trees. But then you start looking at the small to medium to large magnolias. You can get a small, a medium, or large magnolia, native or non-native, but they're, I mean, what would spring be without the magnolia blooms, right?
Right, absolutely.
Some of the larger trees that we really like is the Kentucky yellowwood. That has beautiful, almost wisteria-like flowers, and it's a nice-sized tree, and actually has a similar leaf texture to an ash tree. So as we've been losing a lot of ash trees, if people want something similar, I recommend the Kentucky yellowwood. But then you have the tulip poplar, has nice blooms, but it's a big tree, so it's hard to see them.
Right.
And the same thing with the Kentucky coffee tree. The flowers are very beautiful on it, but again, it's a big tree, so they're hard to see.
And it gets a little messy when the pods drop.
The trick there is to choose a cultivar that is a male so you don't get the pods.
Oh, okay, okay. So. I wish you ever planted the 100-foot one that we had in our backyard, used to have in our backyard, had known that because that was always a fun, fun project.
But if you look at some of the other options, you know, a lot of people are into edible gardening.
And
we have some great options for that around here. Pawpaw season just concluded. And so if you've never had a pawpaw, you still might be able to find some out there. Highly recommend it. Serviceberry trees. A lot of people plant those. And
never
just
even
think,
heard of a serviceberry tree.
Yeah. They're a beautiful tree. They're smaller, multi-trunked, but they have beautiful white flowers early in the spring, followed by berries. And it's always a race to see who gets the berries first, the birds or the people. So, but they are incredibly delicious if you get a chance to have them. And of course, we have our native persimmon, wild plums. The hickories are edible, as are the black walnuts.
Something that's not necessarily native but is edible, certainly if you can fight the birds, is the are just blueberry bushes. And
yeah, the blueberries are, surprisingly, there's a number of them that do very well here.
And do you guys recommend against folks planting blackberries or being, what's your sort of advice to people who are interested in planting blackberries? Because I know in other places I've lived, they get crazy out of control if it's not the right kind of blackberry. Or do you guys suggest that people not plant those on their property?
Well, I personally used to have a wonderful berry patch. I had like 6 or 8 different varieties. And so I had berries from spring until fall. It was wonderful.
That's awesome.
But they require a lot of work. Brambles are not a plant it and forget it sort of plant. They need to be cleaned out. You have some that are called primacane. They bloom first year. Others, they grow 1 year and then they fruit the next. And so depending on the kind that you get, you have to be careful, because I prefer the primacane, because you plant those and in the fall, you mow them to the ground, and they come up in the spring and you get your fruit. If you do that with a normal blackberry, let's say, you cut it back, you have to wait 2 years for the fruit. So there's a lot of cane thinning and things like that. Now, we don't have have a big problem in Kentucky compared to like out in Oregon.
Yeah, that's where you would just see them. It was great if we were riding our bikes and we wanted to go pick some free blackberries, but then
oh yeah,
for the people that own the property, it wasn't so great.
Yeah, so it again, invasiveness is not universal. Just because a plant is invasive in one place doesn't mean it's going to be invasive in another. And with garden plants, you just have to tend it. You have to know what you're getting into. It's just like a pet, you know.
Right.
You wouldn't get a puppy without knowing what that puppy's going to require.
It is a living thing, and that requires attention.
Yes.
If you're just now tuning in, we are talking to Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach at the Clausing Group here in Lexington. And we're talking about sustainability and what you should be thinking about for your landscape and garden in the fall. And we're going to take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversation with Dan. Keep it tuned right here on 93.9 WLXU.
At Oasis Salon, you can celebrate any kind of event, social gathering, or special occasion. Services offered include decoration, catering, waiters, photography and video, and DJs or live bands. Oasis Salon is located at 1816 Oxford Circle, Lexington, Kentucky, or you can call 859-948-3882. Lexington Community Radio thanks Oasis Salon for supporting true community radio.
All right, welcome back. We are talking today with Dan Stever, Director of Employee Development and Outreach at the Clausing Group. And Dan, before we took that last little break, we were talking about trees and shrubs and different sizes, different needs, what types of local sort of more native varieties are good for Lexington or around Central Kentucky. But one of the big challenges that we have now is how to plan for our changing climate. And how do professionals like you who are advising commercial property owners, how do you all plan for what it might be like in 10 to 20 years?
That is incredibly complicated. One thing to understand is, like, we're a USDA Zone 6
right.
for our winters.
Right.
And that means we have an average typical low temperature. And we have to keep in mind that's an average.
Right.
A number of years ago, we were having Zone 8 winters, which means we barely froze at all.
Right.
And then the other winter, we had a minus 20 degrees at one point, which is Zone 4.
Right.
So if you take the average, that's Zone 6.
Right.
So you have to be able to pick plants that can run the gamut of that temperature fluctuation. And we have been trending in Kentucky for the last 100 years. So it's 100 years of a trend of warmer winters.
Mm.
But what that means is we're probably looking at more ice.
Right.
But we're also looking at a trend in Kentucky over that same period of time of becoming more wet.
Mm.
And so we are getting more and more precipitation every year.
Both in the summer and in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it tends to get clustered. So we get a lot of rain in a short period of time. And then we'll have periods of, like, we just went through 2 months of essentially no rain.
Right.
So you have to be able to choose plants that fluctuate between the flood and the drought. The reduced winter temperatures actually can affect things like lilacs and their ability to bloom.
Huh.
So when I lived in Florida, I had people that were from the north that wanted their lilac tree, and they would put ice on the roots every year to try to trigger the bloom.
Huh. At some point, you kind of wanted them to think, should I be doing that in the first place? If I have to put ice on this, maybe this
right.
plant doesn't belong.
But that's going to change things for us here,
yeah.
as certain tulips, daffodils, bulbs like that, they require a certain number of chilling hours. Same thing with some of our fruit trees.
Uh-huh.
It has to get below a certain temperature for a certain period of time.
Right.
And if we don't get that, we no longer get the flowers, we no longer get the fruit.
Right.
So people that, grow fruit trees and things like that need to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and so that's a great lead into the next question I had for you, which is, plants are not cheap, especially if you're doing shrubs, trees, larger plants. It's a pretty big investment and something that you hope will last at least 15, 20 years, especially for trees. How do you all, what factors do you all consider when you're advising your commercial clients about what types of plants they should be investing in? Also kind of factoring in, like, we don't know how warm or how crazy or how dry and wet it's going to be in 5 to 20 years.
Well, first I'd like to say that I would say trees are not expensive to buy, that they are incredibly underpriced.
Wow. Okay.
Because if you look at the amount of time it takes 10 years to grow a tree and you're spending $100 on it,
right,
that's $10 a year,
right,
that you're paying for. And somebody has put time, energy, love into these plants. And I mean, look at the plants you have in your own yard. If you spent 10 years growing something, would you sell it for $100? Probably
right.
not.
Right.
And because you're paying $100 means that the grower is selling it for a lot cheaper than that because there's a markup.
Uh-huh.
So I just want to say we're undervaluing the whole grower industry there. Just a shout out for my friends.
That's a really good point. I think that's a really good point. Yeah.
But, and then you also said trees that hopefully last, you know, 15, 30 years. There are a number of trees that last that long. In the city, trees have a shorter lifespan. The more traffic you have, the more people around, the shorter the lifespan for various reasons. Car wrecks, vandalism, that sort of stuff.
Right.
But you can choose trees that can live for over 100 years.
Right.
And there's quite a few out there that can fit the mold of longevity and also adaptability.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of science going into this right now in the horticultural industry, trying to identify those plants that are going to help or survive through these changes.
Mm-hmm.
And for our area, the white oaks, the bur oak, the swamp oaks, those, the chinkapin, those have been identified as being some of the most adaptable trees.
Wow.
Another one is the Kentucky coffee tree.
Yeah.
Those have all been identified as being tough as nails, being able to handle the change of temperature, and also the change in water regimen.
That's awesome. I don't know if other regions are as lucky as we are then in that way that, you know, I know that we don't have as many of the bur oaks as we did. I know there's a couple that were here before European settlers came in to Kentucky. And very few of those are still in Fayette County, but it's good to know that there's actually a good option for that has been here for, you know, millennia probably.
That's true. Always look at home if you want some good ideas,
right.
You know, and also looking for plants that will be adaptable for the future is, I say look not just at Kentucky, but look at Ohio and also Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
And look at the plants that cross over between those three states.
Right.
That's going to give you a good idea of what can handle the temperature fluctuations.
And I one thing, I'm going to use a very technical term here, but it's been described to me that our forests, especially in eastern Kentucky and West Virginia, are what folks have called mixed mesophytic, which means that we're the southernmost range of the northern trees, hardwoods, and the northernmost range of the southern hardwoods. So it's like actually we have probably more biodiversity and capacity for biodiversity here in central Kentucky than we do than they do even in, you know, a couple states north of us. So
absolutely. Kentucky is a real gem when it comes to unique habitat, the mixing of different biomes. Black Mountain, I know, has been identified as having some of the most unique biodiversity and habitats, and also endemic, which means it's not found anywhere else.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Well, thank you so much, Dan. Again, our guest today has been Dan Stever with the Clausing Group here in Lexington, Kentucky, and in Louisville. And Dan, thank you so much for coming back in the studio and talking with us again, Dan. I really
thanks for the invitation.
Absolutely. And so before we leave, just one more time, I would really advise folks who have an interest in sustainable landscaping, whether it's for your home or commercial property, to check out the blog that the Clausing Group puts out. Dan does a lot of those blogs. Dan, can you tell folks how to find that and subscribe to that newsletter again?
We are at clausinggroup.com. That's K-L-A-U-S-I-N-G group.com.
Awesome. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I hope you have a great week. We'll see you next Friday here on the Green Waves radio program.